You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. It's time to look in the mirror, America. Do you like what you see? Pick up the mirror now, America. Go ahead, pick it up. What are you, afraid? It's just a mirror, America. What could it do to you except reflect your image? The Majority Report.
It is Thursday, March 3rd, 2011. My name is Sam Cedar, and this is The Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Thank you, voice of the Majority Report, John Benjamin, for bringing us in today. As every day, viewed the first three, I don't know, they haven't decided the order of the shows, of John Benjamin Has a Van last night. Extremely funny. Talk about it more during the post-show. John Benjamin, of course, a rabid conservative, very angry that we use liners from him from when a time where he did not realize what the politics of this program were. But be that as it may, we can talk about that during the members-only section of the program. From Wisconsin, this ad from the PCC, the PCCC, let's just say it that way, released and now playing, I believe, in Wisconsin. Let's hear this ad from the Progressive Change Campaign Committee.
Governor Walker and the Republicans just gave over $100 million in tax cuts to corporations, and now they're asking teachers and nurses to pay for it and attacking workers' rights to negotiate for fair benefits.
It will probably cost us between $400 and $500 a month in income. I've tried not to think about it, just be out here on the square. It's not selfish, it's just survival.
I'm just a secretary, and this bill that Walker's proposing is going to cost me over $3,000 a year, not to mention more down the road when we lose our collective bargaining rights.
I believe that the issues that are being discussed here in Madison are not unique to Madison or the state of Wisconsin. These are national issues. Money is being taken away from workers and the tax breaks given to major corporations.
This is Republican class warfare, an attack on the middle class. This is a battle we need to win.
Obviously, screaming communists, these people looking to take over and turn us all into collectivists, they probably all would love all of us to take trains. I imagine these so-called secretaries and so-called electricians, so-called teachers, so-called nurses. I wonder if the Progressive Change Campaign Committee didn't bring all those people on a train. And what we're seeing in Wisconsin is quickly growing beyond the scope of simply a workers' rights movement. According to the Wisconsin Democratic Party email that was obtained by Think Progress this morning, citizens from around the state took the first steps to filing recall papers against key Republican senators who have stood with Scott Walker and pushed his partisan power grab that will strip thousands of middle-class teachers, nurses, librarians, and other workers of their right to collective bargaining. They isolated 8 of these potential recall candidates. One who won his vote just by 184 votes. One who won her race by only 1,000 votes. Supporters of this recall effort have 60 days to collect an amount of signatures equal to at least 25% of the vote cast for the office of governor at the last election within the same district or territory that the office holder is being recalled. So in other words, 5,000 people or 4,000 people voted for governor in District 13 in Wisconsin. Let's call that district Cheeseville, Dairy Town, whatever it is. And there need to be 1,000 signatures. My guess is it's not going to be too difficult for these people to collect signatures. If the supporters succeed in collecting the signatures, essentially what it causes is a do-over vote. The office holder being recalled isn't kicked out. They're basically, they just have to run again. I guess they are being kicked out. They have to run again. They have the opportunity to run again. And now it seems that the SEIU has signed on to the recall effort. They'll be using their resources to help push this, obviously. And this is what's really interesting. The chairman of the Wisconsin Democratic Party suggests that his party will continue to back this recall effort even if the 8 targeted senators offer to withdraw their support for Governor Walker's anti-union bill in order to quell the recall campaign. Quote, in the past 24 hours, this has gotten so much larger than the rights of our public employees. This is much larger now than it was weeks ago. Now, this can be read in two ways. One, it's encouraging to see how aggressive the Democratic Party is being in Wisconsin, sort of severed from the National Democratic Party. But it also leads me to believe that they have reason to believe that there are no Republicans who are going to back down from this effort. That to the extent that they have an opportunity to stop this effort, it's going to be a legal one, wherein county district attorneys will say this is a violation of the home rule. You are by imposing this law that doesn't allow unions to collectively bargain in our municipalities, in our counties, you are effectively destroying the local autonomy to negotiate as they will. So that cuts both ways. The name of the website that you can go to support that endeavor by the PCC is waronworkingfamilies.com, waronworkingfamilies.com. Later in this program, actually just moments from now, maybe running a couple of minutes behind, we will be talking to David K. Johnson. He is the former New York Times writer, author of a couple of books, which Dorsey will IM me in a moment. I know I've read him. I've read one of David K. Johnson's book. Man, I don't think I've ever dog-eared anything more in my entire life. Yeah, I read his, and this was from like 2005, I think, that book. We will be talking to him in moments. Meanwhile, Obama, down in Miami, visiting schools with Jeb Bush. And Valerie Strauss of the Washington Post has a good point here. Poor timing, poor choice of who you should be palling around with. We all remember that Obama was going to put on his soft shoes, right? When the right of collective bargaining was going to be attacked by Republicans. Well, instead, he's putting on soft shoes and walking around with Jeb Bush. I don't know if Obama's the enemy. I don't think he is, frankly. But he's not your friend. And despite the fact we sent out an email blast this morning, and of course we get the first responses I get are from the most insane people. The guy who, some guy sent me an email. This guy emails me all the time when there's an email blast out. You must be pretty upset. Ed Schultz got the 10 p.m. show when you've been doing all this gatekeeping about 9/11. And I said, you know, you've got a real point there. I'm doing all the heavy lifting on the gatekeeping. Other people are reaping the rewards. If it wasn't for the fact that that George Soros gave me my own island to keep my mouth shut and a Swiss bank account, I would be rather miffed at this point. But what is it? What does I used to tell my daughter all the time? You get what you get, and you don't get upset for being a gatekeeper. That's what I taught her. Daddy, what's a gatekeeper? Just say what I tell you to say. That's the first thing you learn as a gatekeeper. Obama's appearing in Florida as state legislators move towards passing legislation, Senate Bill 736, House Bill 7019, ties at least half of teacher's salary to how well are his or her students perform on standardized tests. There is no evidence. In fact, there is evidence to the contrary, that teaching towards standardized tests does not help educate a child. What it does is it teaches them to take a specific standardized test, one which will not help them in any way in the future, unless they are called upon throughout their life to take that same standardized test that is supposed to measure their acumen in fourth or eighth grade. That is the only thing that you would get a benefit from that, and probably because the way it's taught, you would probably not have that information or capacity to recall it or rework it out months, certainly not years, after you've taken that standardized test. But what it does do is it makes everybody feel good about themselves. It increases the market for standardized test preparation companies, which I think Jeb Bush's brother, Neil, actually sold at one point, if he's not still selling. Didn't they hand them out to people in Houston, in the Houston Dome, when they flown in from in the wake of Katrina? Neil Bush going around like, here's my education proposal. What was the name of Neil Bush's company? Where did he sell this crap? You seen it?
I'm looking it up now.
I don't know. But I do know that for a fact.
Ignite Incorporated.
Thank you. Ignite. Yes, it's going to ignite all sorts of profits. That's what it was. The Bush family contributed money to the education of a lot of these kids who were displaced in Katrina. But some of it was, but a certain portion was earmarked towards buying the Ignite packages. God forbid Neil Bush would actually give that stuff up for those kids. And God forbid you'd let educators actually determine what's best for them. It prevents consideration of many advanced degrees and special training to be considered in determining a teacher's salary. Of course. Of course. Because the last thing you want is a teacher's salary to be determined on how much work they have put in to learn the ability to teach. Any advanced degrees, this and that, you want to discourage this. You want to disincentivize their going out and getting more educational experience. Eliminates tenure for teachers hired after the summer of 2014. Because when you have trouble retaining teachers, the average teacher leaves after 5 years. What you want to do is disincentivize their commitment to the profession. That's what you want to do. Tenure does not mean that you can never be fired. It means that there is a process in which must take place before you can be fired. Because we all know there's no politics in education. People who teach kids to think and reason on their own very rarely have a problem or perceiving the way that an administrator is doing things. And then, of course, administrators, we never see a situation where administrators would want to pick out certain people who are not part of the team, as it were. Never mind their ability to teach. They're not part of the team. They're not supporting my program sufficiently enough to keep. We never see that happen. We never see most productive stars in any type of organization, let's say, like Randy Rhodes or Keith Olbermann, ever get singled out by an administration and get eliminated. And then we see what happens to that team. Requires the creation of new standardized assessments for all courses, though it doesn't suggest where the money will come to pay for it. Well, there you have it. I'll pick up this story after we speak to David K. Johnson, because we have many things to talk to him about, not the least of which Republicans are – this is quite an interesting story. For every dollar the IRS spends in seeking out tax cheats, it receives $10 return. In other words, we spend $6 billion on tracking down tax cheats, $60 billion we recover. Now, if you are one of those business types that the Republicans like to pretend that they are, Wouldn't you want to actually increase that budget? Because if we increase it by 20%, we get exponentially more money back into the government for revenue.
I don't think so.
No, that's not what Republicans want to do. It's all part of their ideological war to strip the government of revenue. And in fact, when we speak to David K. Johnston in just a moment, he will tell us that we do indeed have a revenue, not a spending problem in this country. We'll be right back. Hi, folks. You can always support the show and get great coffee, tea, or chocolate by going to justcoffee.coop. Putting the coupon code MAJORITY in the coupon box, get a 10% discount, get some great fair trade coffee. And, of course, the real way that this show is going to be able to continue is if you become a member now. You can do so at majority.fm. You get almost an hour of extra daily show, plus some swag, plus knowing that you're supporting independent media. Thanks. We are back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report on the phone. It is a pleasure to welcome to the program the author of numerous books, including Perfectly Legal, The Covert Campaign to Rig Our Tax System to Benefit the Super Rich, which I have dog-eared. I may actually have to buy another copy. I have read that thing so many times. Free Lunch, How the Wealthiest Americans Enrich Themselves at Government Expense and Stick You with the Bill, and other books. He now is a writer at tax.com. Welcome to the program, David K. Johnson. Thanks for joining us, David.
Hi there.
Hi. There's a couple of questions I want to ask you. Starting with this slight controversy over this notion that taxpayers are footing the bill, or that Scott Walker wants union members to put more of their money into their pensions. It seems to me that taxpayers are not only paying for these union members' pensions; they're paying for their gas when they fill it up at the car. They're paying for their food. It's almost as if taxpayers pay their salaries.
Well, you've hit upon exactly the point. What Governor Walker did, and then news reporters, including my former newspaper, the New York Times, have uncritically accepted, is to say that the workers should pay more, or he said contribute more, to their pension and health care plans. The problem with that is that the workers are the source of 100% of the money going into those plans, 100 cents out of every dollar. And here's the reason. It's just basic market economics. When you perform a job, you are compensated for your services, and your compensation is not limited just to your paycheck. I mean, if people believe that, then if you get a paid vacation, do you think that's a gift from your boss? You think he gives it to some stranger walking down the street? No, it's a business expense or a government expense, and you earn it. So what the governor's really doing is using an accounting issue that has no economic substance to try and find a way to cut the cash wages of workers. And it may be teachers are paid too much or too little. There's a market and there's a negotiating system to deal with that. But the fact is, the money, it's their money.
Right. And so, you know, were there no pension fund, we could anticipate the salaries of these employees to rise a certain percentage commensurate of the market value of that pension.
Correct. And by the way, the Wisconsin pension is fully funded. It has 99.7% of the money on what's called a smoothing basis and more than 90% of the necessary money in it on a current market value basis. That's not true of all states, but it is true in Wisconsin. And there's a pattern here, Sam. Notice what Republicans are going after. The best funded program. Social Security has a dedicated funding stream and $2 trillion in reserve. It's under attack. Medicare has a dedicated funding stream to provide medical care for old people and those people who become disabled. It's under attack. Pensions that are fully funded are under attack. You notice a pattern?
It's simply that this is an ideological battle as opposed to one that has anything to do with any type of finances.
That's right. But many people do not understand that. I mean, this column that I wrote at tax.com about this has produced, you go to Google, screen after screen after screen of people commenting on it. And one of the things I find amazing is many people who call themselves conservatives or libertarians insist, and I've jousted with some of them on the internet, that it's the taxpayers' money. Well, yes, if you live in a small C communist society, it's the taxpayers' money. But once the workers have done the work, then the taxpayers bought that work, and it's not the taxpayers' money anymore. And how fascinating that people who say, well, I'm a business owner or I'm a leading libertarian, don't understand these fundamental principles of private property and market economics. And what's really going on is they hate government so much it blinds them. And, of course, there are people who will exploit this because it benefits them in this ideological dispute about what our country is going to be like.
Right. I mean, we don't, at any given point, I don't go around saying Bill Gates is flying around with my money because I once bought a computer with Microsoft on it. Let me ask you this. One of the things that we do know coming out of Wisconsin is that two-thirds of the corporations pay no taxes there. And according to recent reports following the protest by U.S. Uncut, I have more money in my wallet, at least theoretically, than Bank of America paid in taxes this year. What accounts for two-thirds of the corporations in Wisconsin not paying any taxes?
That's very simple. Political favors. The reason the tax code has been growing like crazy, and most of this growth has taken place since the beginning of Reaganism in 1980 and the adoption of these Milton Friedman ideas that are making us all poor except the very, very, very top, is all these favors. The tax code, as it applies to you and me in the audience listening to this, it doesn't complicate it. I mean, if you want to take a lot of itemized deductions, there's some complications. But the provisions, and remember, I have exposed so many tax dodges, Sam, that, as you know, there's a business school professor who called me the de facto chief tax enforcement officer of the United States. Just two of them I shut down were worth $250 billion. And there's a massive effort underway to make the tax code so complicated that the IRS can't enforce it, so that these corporations, many of which are inefficiently run by managers of dubious competence but making enormous amounts of money, can continue. And by the way, have you heard the joke about the CEO and the public union worker and the Tea Partier?
I have, but it's definitely worth bearing because I would love to hear you
CEO,
tell it.
A CEO, a Tea Partier, and a unionized public worker sit down at a table. The CEO grabs all 12 cookies sitting in front of them, leaving crumbs, turns to the Tea Party and says, "Watch that union guy. He wants your crumbs."
Well, I have to admit, I heard a different version of it. I heard the...
Yes, probably left one cookie on the table, right?
That's right. I heard the one cookie, but you've actually probably put it to scale properly at that point, isn't it?
Well, here's the reason I altered it a little bit, and somebody else suggested this to me, actually. If you look at the income data from 1980 to 2008, that's the latest total income data we have, the bottom 90% of Americans, that's almost all of us, right? That's 90% of us. For every dollar that we made on average in 1980, we now have a dollar and a penny a year. That's how much better off we are. One penny a year more after 30 years. At the top tenth of 1%, that's the 2 million and up crowd. Their average income has risen from $1.4 million to $6 million.
Well, to be fair, $6 million does not get you what it used to get you. I mean,
doesn't go as far as it used to. That's exactly right. And here's another fact. I have a column up today at tax.com about this. You know, we were told by President Bush two things, and he was consistent and said this all the way through his administration. You got to respect the man for being consistent. He said, my plan will make everyone in America more prosperous. He said it in writing in his campaign materials. And lower taxes were the key to doing this. Well, it's now 10 years later. Federal income tax, individual income taxes, you will hear constantly from uninformed people on the right. They'll tell you revenues went up. No, they didn't. My column today shows they're down 30%. And when you adjust for the larger population, they're down 36%. Corporate tax revenues are down by essentially the same numbers. These policies are making us poorer. We have 30 years of history. It's intensified in the last 10 years. And here's my question to the American people. When do we recognize a failed policy and go to a new policy? Our economic competitors are not doing what we're doing. If you go to Europe, people not only are unionized, managers and low-level executives belong to unions.
Now I want to,
go ahead.
Well, I want to go back to this because one of the greatest lies I think that has been told to the American public, and that is that, you know, just the other day I saw Jeffrey Sachs on some program, and he was talking about, he's been sort of oddly aggressive about criticizing what's going on in this country right now, but that aside, he suggested that the idea that we're cutting spending, and the idea that we're cutting taxes is ridiculous. And the announcer, now I can't remember what show it was on, probably on CNBC or something like that, where one might expect this, but the announcer or the host said, oh, so wait a second, you don't believe in the Laffer curve? And will you tell people what the Laffer curve is? I mean, your story essentially is today is your piece today at tax.com is essentially, in many respects, debunking it. But this is important, particularly, in the, anticipating the Ayn Rand Atlas Shrugged movie that's going to come out, or part one. Tell us about
Yes. Well, Ayn Rand is at the center of all this, who, by the way, at the end of her life depended on Medicare to, have surgery that she needed and got Social Security.
Right, but let's say, to be fair, she did it under her husband's name so that nobody would know.
That's
so
right.
So at least she had the good sense to be ashamed by it.
By it. The this is another three people sit on the table story. Dick Cheney, a journalist named Jude Winiski, and Arthur Laffer sit down at a table in Washington, D.C., and on a napkin sketch out this idea that if the income tax rate is zero, the government's tax revenue is zero. If the income tax rate is 100%, the governor's rate is zero because no one will work. And then they draw an absolutely smooth line that the lower the tax rate, the greater the revenues. Well, we now know what happens. We have the real world experience. And what happens is that revenues fall in several years at 14 times the rate that you would expect. And I would argue that instead of looking like a nice smooth line, as many economists do with their papers, it looks like a ball of yarn a kitten's been playing with.
Right.
It's all over the place. There is some basic truth to the notion. If your tax rate's 90% and you cut it to 50, you're going to have a big economic effect. But that's not the situation that we are in. So it is fundamental to understand that we were told lower tax rates will lead to higher revenues. Sometimes in the past that's happened, but you know, it was after Bill Clinton signed the 1993 Tax Act, revenues went up, and we got the only two balanced budgets since Lyndon Johnson balanced his last budget.
There was a former head of the surplus budget. Now there was a former head of the Cato Institute. I think it was Nickerson.
Bill Niskanen,
and he had a theory that if you cut revenues, if you cut taxes below a certain percentage of GDP, you actually would increase spending, government spending. What is your sense of that theory? Have you heard of that?
Yes, and actually, we're seeing that right now. I mean, let me make a statement that even to your audience may jar some people. All private wealth is based on a foundation of common wealth. You cannot get rich as a whole society if you don't have people who are educated who can do the work, especially in the world we're moving into, which is incredibly requires incredible intellectual, engineering, math, biological statistical skills. You have to have public facilities to move things, roads, canals, docks, all of these things. You have to have a legal system to enforce contracts and settle disputes peacefully. There's a whole huge area that you have to have as a foundation on which to build wealth. And if you don't think that, look at the poor countries of the world. They're the ones that don't have this foundation, and you have a narrow oligarchy.
I should say that these commonwealth, these attributes of the commonwealth that you're talking about, supersede anything that the Constitution would suggest a federal government has an affirmative right to create.
Yes. There's a big argument as to what is the appropriate jurisdiction and role here of government. I actually, at a public forum some years ago, raised the issue of when I was a young man, college was free. And now, of course, it's a business, a lending business, that's made a few people very rich. The biggest lender, Sallie Mae, year after year makes a profit margin of 50%. Most businesses in America make a profit margin of under 10. They make 50%. And the argument I got back was, well, you know, not everybody needs to have a college education, and those people who get one, they make more money, they should pay for it. I'm sorry, police officers, librarians, kindergarten teachers require a college education, and we think they're going to get rich off of going into debt so they can do that? That's crazy. That's right. Just a nutty idea. So fundamentally, there's this approach. It's called supply-side economics, that if you cut tax rates, investors will put more money in and we'll get growth. Well, you know, right now, corporate America is sitting on almost $2 trillion of cash. That's the equivalent of almost $7,000 for every man, woman, and child in America. They're not creating jobs with it. In fact, they're out asking for taxpayers to give them money. And here in New York State, we just agreed to give Yahoo $2.1 million for each of 125 jobs it's going to create. And these jobs will pay about $50,000 on average. We agreed to give Verizon $3.1 million for 200 jobs. $611 million to Verizon over a period of years to create 200 jobs.
Now, when you say we're giving them that money, we're essentially basically saying you don't have to pay this amount of taxes, or are we actually affirmatively giving them this money?
Well, in these two examples, these are two things: the use of eminent domain to seize the property they want, and then the forgiveness so they don't have to pay taxes, which means you and I have to make up for those taxes or else take less services. You know, we don't have as many teachers or as many police officers. But many of these programs, we're literally giving the money away. We are giving Alcoa power from Niagara Falls. And Governor Cuomo, no one has reported this, Sam. Governor Cuomo is giving a huge amount of the public power to companies as a gift in his budget. Wow. If you don't think that Cuomo, a Democrat, isn't part of the group that's redistributing upwards, and that's what this fundamentally is. This is a socialist redistribution scheme, and remember what George Orwell taught us. You know, the pigs have to get the milk and apples, not because any other reason except they have to do the special work that requires this, and the rest of us will have to take less, because they're more equal.
Right.
And Cuomo is doing this. They want to kill the tax on very high-income New Yorkers. All over the country, the rich don't have enough is the dominant theme. And for years, I have felt frustrated by people who just don't seem to be paying a lot of attention. I have to tell you that since this Wisconsin thing, I think we're seeing a real change. I think a lot of people are suddenly recognizing this. The governor tried to break off the police and firefighters unions.
Yeah.
And not remove them from collective bargaining agreements, and you'll now see most of the police and firefighter groups are opposing him because they recognize once they're separated, they can be gotten rid of. I'd also suggest, you know, it's instructive to go back and read Plato and Aristotle on how would-be tyrants surround themselves with bodyguards and why.
Right, and referencing the Walker's claim of using the National Guard, and also sort of trying to maintain the troopers on his side, I guess the state troopers and whatnot.
Yes, right. And we've seen one of the sheriffs now say, my deputies are not a palace guard,
right?
Because they're not going to go along with this. But we should be very, very, very suspicious of people whose first two reactions to a problem, and there's a problem in Wisconsin. No question about that. Their first two reactions are to use muscle and to refuse to negotiate. And at the same time that they're saying the state's short $130 million and we want to take it out of the pockets of teachers and librarians and fisheries biologists, giving $140 million in tax cuts to corporations.
Yeah, I mean, maybe this is sort of a naive lament on my part, but you know, it is a shame that, and I'm concerned, but maybe hopefully we're past that point now that people have woken up a little bit. But had Scott Walker not sort of preemptively said he was going to bring out the National Guard, I don't know that there would have been this type of backlash, because that to me seemed to be the straw that broke the camel's back, at least rhetorically. But I want to talk about one of the other reasons why we don't see a reaction to people, from just average people, to both the type of situation that we're seeing in Wisconsin, but this general redistribution of income upwards. And I know obviously I've dealt with the right-wing misinformation machine for a long time, but one of the things that I appreciate about what you're doing at Tax.com and in your writing and in the past is that you are willing to call out the so-called neutral media, the objective media, on their either willful ignorance to this issue or just ignorance to this issue.
Most of this, I spent over 40 years doing daily journalism, and I met, you meet all kinds. I mean, I literally in my career sat next to people who were fascists and communists, people who were prudes and libertines, people who were screamingly loud atheists and screamingly loud believers, okay?
Mm-hmm.
When any kind of person I didn't have literally as a desk mate in those 40 years or within a few desks of mine. And the problem is most journalists, they want to tell stories. A lot of them would be novelists if they had the skill. Maybe I would be if I was good enough. And they're not, they're very literate, but they're not numerate. They are innumerate. They don't understand numbers, and almost none of them did what I did when I was young, and I've always tried to encourage journalists to do. I took courses, graduate courses, in public administration to understand how bureaucrats think and how policy gets made. And most of them don't. So and journalists have to rely on shorthand. So what I've done is pointed out this is bad shorthand. You took what the governor said, assumed the underlying facts were true, and then we get this bad, really bad reporting, which is what we called my column, really bad reporting in Wisconsin. And let me draw a historical comparison. Back when Copernicus and Galileo were proving that the Earth was not the center of the universe, as the church taught and demanded that you obey at the threat of death, there were people who built machines, mechanical devices, which proved that the motion of the stars and the planets and the sun showed that that the Earth was the center of the universe and they moved around the Earth. If you get the principles wrong, then you will absolutely get the mechanics wrong. And what the governor did was he took accounting, internal accounting, which has no economic substance except helping the state of Wisconsin reduce the taxes it pays to the federal government on the wages paid to its workers, mm-hmm. and turned it into economic substance in the minds of people. And lots of people, it's very clear, you can see them on TV and everywhere else, they think that these pensions are a gift from the taxpayers, not right. that they were negotiated by contract, and they represent a diversion of wages from cash today into a plan soon and old. And by the way, these pension plans save taxpayers money.
That's right. Because
lots of people mismanage their money, Sam. Right. And if these workers retired without a pension, it is absolutely as certain as the sun rises in the east every morning that a number of these people would end up on welfare in their old age.
And isn't it also the case that any dollar that is put into a pension plan for 20, 25 years down the road, 30 years down the road, 40 years down the road, is actually probably it would be the equivalent of a dollar and a quarter, $1.50, $1.75, whatever the figure is today. In other words,
well, after 28 years, it should be the equivalent of about $8. But yes, the Wisconsin pension.
I'm only speaking about my pension.
Yes, well, it is. If you properly fund a pension, there's no issue about it. You can go out tomorrow and buy a pension, a defined benefit pension. You call up Prudential or New York Life, and you say, listen, I'm this age. At the following age, I want to get a check every month for the rest of my life, and maybe I want a 10-year promise that even if I die the next day, 10 years get paid out. And here's how much money I have today, and they'll tell you, here's how much we'll give you. There's no issue about funding pensions if you follow sound economic principles, which
right.
they have done in Wisconsin. That's why I find absolutely fascinating that people like Governor Walker, people like the Tea Party candidates who've been elected to Congress, many of them, what they want to go after are the well-funded, economically sound parts of our economy.
Well, and, you know, that, I mean, again, it's just one more issue of it being ideology. I'm sure you saw this. I'm sure you're aware of this story that the GOP is trying to cut the IRS budget, despite the fact, and you know this, that their rate of return is basically 10 to 1.
Yes, and at a minimum 10 to 1. You know, let me give you the equivalent. The Republicans want to cut $600 million out of the roughly $12 billion, so 5% out of the IRS budget. And what that means is the functional equivalent of, imagine if your police chief or mayor said tomorrow, we are going to close down the detective squad at the police department that does murders, robberies, burglaries, and rapes. And we're going to shift those officers, we're going to fire those officers, and we're going to increase hiring of meter maids and meter men to write parking tickets. That's what they're talking about here. And remember, in 1995, the Republicans demanded, and Clinton went along, with increasing audits of the working poor. One of the stories that I won my Pulitzer for, the one that hangs on the wall at the New York Times, was when I proved that the IRS was auditing the working poor more than the affluent.
Right.
And that's crazy, just like some of these other proposals, giving a $3.1 million tax break for a $50,000 job is crazy.
Well, it's
and
only
the American public needs to wake up to this.
Right. It's only crazy if you start with the premise that they want government to function. If you want to demonize the IRS, it's actually a very smart move.
Yes, and it's also, by the way, cutting back the IRS budget. It also means that there's a much smaller likelihood you will be embarrassed because some of your big contributors turn out to be tax cheats. In one of my books, I report that there's this brilliant guy, Jerry Kernut, who knows how to find huge sums of money very simply using computer technology. New York State government in particular could use this and won't. And the governor's office said, oh, no, we're not going to do this. We might have one of the governor's contributors be embarrassed.
Oh, gosh. All right. Well, David K. Johnson, tax.com, and, of course, Perfectly Legal, Free Lunch, Temples of Chance. Thank you so much for joining us. We'd love to have you back soon.
Thank you, Sam.
Bye-bye. Well, folks, went a little long today with David K. Johnson, but just a wealth of information there. You know, so when you hear one of your right-wing friends say, like, the stimulus didn't work. We spent how much money on every job? You can tell them about Yahoo. You can tell them about Verizon. You can tell them about the oil subsidies. You can tell them about tax cheats and how that's ongoing. Unbelievable. Genuinely unbelievable. All right, we're going to, I guess, we will talk to you on the flip side. If you are listening live, you can join me, and I am me at majority.fm. Still got a lot of stuff in the stack. May have to deal with it. Gosh, we're running out of time. Tomorrow's a Friday already. And we have Bill McKibben on tomorrow. A special casual Friday, not so casual guest. Well, he's casual. We'll talk to Chris Rosen, too. Chris, I know you're out there, and I know you're whining right now. Wait, I've been bummed for 2 weeks. I haven't been on the show. You'll be on. We'll figure it out. All right. Join me on the flip side, Majority FM. You can IM me your questions. We'll get a couple more stories talking. Do you hear that, folks? That's the sound of silence. Now, I don't want to get too philosophical on you here, but that's the sound you're going to hear if I can't get more members. And who am I going to get to join the Majority Report if not you? People who listen to the show on a daily, maybe thrice weekly basis. Become a member today, support the show, ensure its existence. And on top of that, you're going to get an extra 50 minutes of programming on a daily basis, access to members-only content on Majority.fm, and a warm, fuzzy feeling inside of you. Or that also could be some of the swag that I send. Either way, become a member today. And don't forget, we're sponsored by Just Coffee at justcoffee.coop. You can get tea, you can get chocolate, you can get coffee, obviously. It's all fair trade, it's delicious, and you can get 10% off by putting Majority in the coupon code at justcoffee.coop. So support the show and enjoy it.